The sponsor of this week's episode of the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast is Clarisites. Tired of waiting for updates to slow dashboards that don't tell you the complete story? Tired of manually aggregating data on spreadsheets to understand your campaign performance? What if you could access all the data you need in one place, without dependencies on SQL, spreadsheets, or valuable data team resourcing? That's why performance marketers at Uber, HelloFresh, Delivery Hero, and many others trust Clarisites to run marketing reporting, automating all manual work and helping them focus on insights that drive performance. What used to take weeks now takes minutes with Clarisites. Go to clarisites.com/demo to try it out for free. You'll see why thousands of performance marketers trust Clarisites every day.
The problem is that the distinction needs to be drawn between the competence of the economists and the correctness of their analysis.
Welcome to the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast. As always, I am your host, Eric Sufert. The topic of discussion in today's episode of the Mobile Dev Memo Podcast is out-of-home advertising measurement. And I will be discussing that topic with Ty Tinker, the head of analytics at AdQuick. Ty, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Eric.
Well, thank you for coming on. So before we jump in, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
I'm Ty Tinker. I head up analytics for AdQuick. I've been with the company just over a year. My background is just outside, adjacent of the marketing space. I got a degree in economics in San Antonio from Trinity University, and then a master's in business analytics, which put me on a straight path to business analytics and data science. I worked with a bank for a couple of years, building recommender systems and banking products there, which helped to sell some of the products and predict the likelihood of purchase for commercial bank products, but had recently transitioned into the marketing space and found a great op here in specifically out of home. So now running analytics for an out-of-home company, out-of-home platform called AdQuick. Yeah, looking forward to the conversation and covering some of these points.
Likewise, what kind of things does a bank recommend to customers out of curiosity?
Yeah, it's fairly straightforward. I was on the commercial bank side, so they had a long list of payments products, didn't quite have the penetration that they were expecting or wanted. So within their existing customer base, they were interested in kind of cross-selling banking products. So think check printing and payments products and some commercial bank loans and syndications at the greater enterprise scale. So just a huge list of items. Our idea was to predict the likelihood that they would purchase that in the upcoming year and sell before it happened.
I see. Interesting. And then you transitioned from that into out-of-home advertising. Let's start with a fairly broad, big concept question, which is, what is out-of-home advertising?
Yeah. Out-of-home advertising is anything that doesn't live in the digital space. So nothing that's on your phone, nothing that's on your computer. And it's just about everything else. So it can include planes, ships, billboards, digital ads that you see on shelves at Whole Foods. So anything can be out of home. Specifically, a large part of the industry is going to fit into the traditional out of home space. So think of billboards, or at least that's what most people think of, but out of home is all encompassing.
But it does exclude anything that you would be exposed to while in the home, right? So it doesn't include TV, I guess would be the big one, and radio, right? I mean, it's got to be like a physical ad that is in your physical space. Got it.
Yep. So direct mail, TV, CTV, sit outside of the space.
Okay. And so we were just discussing this before we started recording, but I think it's a good point to clarify. So within the out of home category, there's a subset called digital out of home. So out of home, most people abbreviate OOH, and there's DOOH. What is DOOH? What's the difference between DOOH and OOH?
Yeah, DOOH is digital out of home, and it's anything that's booked on a digital screen. So this can include your typical digital boards that run maybe 8-second ads on specific billboards. You'll see them in city centers. It can also include the digital programmatic space. So these are programmatically booked units that have a bidder system powering them. You can bid based on a CPM and then reserve a slot. So you can think of a great example would be some of the EV charging stations, which are also digital. That's differentiated from the traditional out of home, which is your typical vinyl wraps or wrapped cars, that type of thing.
Got it. And to be clear, your platform facilitates the purchase of both, right? It's not it doesn't specialize exclusively in out of home. You can do digital out of home. It's just bought differently.
Yeah, precisely. The buying process is a little bit different for digital programmatic. We have a DSP, which plugs into an SSP for digital out of home. And then you can also purchase digital traditionally, so you can have reserved booked slots for a period of time on a digital screen.
Got it. The reason that came up was I had the misapprehension that digital out of home was basically just any out of home that was purchased digitally. So purchased with some sort of web-based ads manager. But you clarified that digital out of home really means it's a digital billboard, that for the placement to be digital out of home, the actual format needs to be digital and therefore not applied with some sort of like physical advertising surface.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's funny that taxonomy and out of home is long discussed. I work with OAAA on their data analytics committee to help establish the taxonomy for out of home. And that's just the beginning. The media types and media subtypes within this space it's an absurdly long list with distinctions that I don't even understand. So it can be tricky to clarify, but important when it comes to attribution and measurement for the digital versus static space.
So, okay. So you're probably familiar with the sphere, right? It's related to what you said. So it was triggered by what you said, but you're familiar with the sphere, right? Like in Las Vegas, this giant dome. Okay. So someone asked me on Twitter, you know, what is the CPM of the sphere? And I said, well, I don't know. I remembered someone on Twitter highlighting the fact that buying a one day placement on the sphere, which rotates, right? So you don't get just run of channel. It's rotated between, I think it was three advertisers a day, was like nearly $500,000. I think it was $450,000. But that's just the cost. That's not the CPM, right? So to calculate the CPM, you'd have to understand, well, okay, how many thousands of people are going to see this? How do they do that? How do they estimate the number of people, the number of impressions that those units get on any given day? Do you think there's like some sophisticated science behind that? Or do you think it's like very, very rough, like, well, okay, this many people are in Vegas every day and this many people might be looking towards the sphere at any one moment in time? How do you think that they estimate that? And maybe you know for sure, but if you don't, like, I would just like to hear your guess.
Yeah, it's not deterministic. We have a huge subset of our advertisers are transitioning from the digital space and finding out of home, especially in moving towards a privacy-centric world. So there's a lot of curiosity about the level of tracking and ability to understand what a real impression is. It is incredibly difficult to nail that down. There is a trade org, they're called Geopath, who establishes kind of the right-sized impressions volumes, not just for something like the sphere, which is quite spectacular and can be seen from planes. So I don't know if they're incorporating that data into their estimates, but it definitely is a bit more accurate when it comes down to the tens of thousands of ad units that are available across the US that are currently tracking their system. So the source of truth, at least for pricing and CPMs, is going to be Geopath's impression data. How they estimate this, I'm not on their team, but I have some visibility into what they do. It's based on traffic data, mobile location data, audience measurement, and it brings it to a final kind of impression calculation. The accuracy obviously can vary and starts to wean with lack of mobile location data in certain areas, but it is the source of truth for pricing. And so it's something that as a platform, we obviously have to plug into and leverage for our pricing.
Got it. But so just to be clear, so this Geopath, they're the ones that provide the impression counts that would determine the CPM. So, I mean, we know the cost.
Yeah.
And so whoever sells the sphere, I don't know, the Sphere Inc.
Yeah.
They have the fixed cost for the placement in the day. And then they would just take Geopath's impression estimates, that's a third party service. You'd almost think about it like a rating agency or something for financial products. And then they would just take that and they would just adjust the price by that count divided by 1,000. And that would be the CPM.
Yeah, it's quite similar, comparable to a rating agency. Exactly.
I guess that begs the question, who pays Geopath? How do they get paid? Are they paid by these digital billboard operators?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not positive on who pays them. I know that there is some funding from existing vendors, so media owners, but I'm not positive on who that would be.
Fascinating. I remember, you know, many years ago, I was doing this marketing experiment, and I thought that sporting events would be a place to sort of drive. It could be an event around which, like, an install camp, like a local, like, in-person app install campaign could be organized. And so I, just as a test, right, I went and I basically sponsored, I bought some TV ads, local market TV ads, and I went out to this game. So the TV ads ran the night before the game. And then at the game, I sponsored the tailgate and I sponsored like the radio station that was sort of emceeing the tailgate. And we put up a bunch of monitors all around the tailgate with just these ads, right? Like, and they were the same ads that we ran, you know, in mobile ad networks. There was video and some static. And there was a company at the time, it was like a early stage startup. What they did was they had a, I don't even know what you'd call it. It was just some sort of device that you'd plug in. You could plug in many of them. It covered some like physical area. It had some sort of like radius of physical area that could, it could basically measure phones that were trying to reach a Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah.
And so it used that to sort of estimate the number of people that you reached, right? So like if you thought, okay, well, there's physical ad exposures in this space and we can estimate the number of people that were in the space at that time based on the number of phones that were trying to ping to a Wi-Fi network or something, then it just gives you some general estimate of what the conversion rate was like. And that was many years ago. That was like 6 years ago. I imagine that's gotten much more sophisticated now. But it was really interesting to see the ways in which, you know, companies were trying to tackle that measurement problem.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important question and not going to get easier. We're working in a period where this is the best volume of data that's going to be made available to us at this point, especially with mobile location data, GAIDs, IDFAs in the state where we're not going to have any more. We're not going to improve our access to mobile location data and linking those across platforms and trying to track whatever your conversion event would be is not going to get any easier. So this is the time to start measuring. Unfortunately, out of home has run on a measurement delay, as I like to put it, where direct attribution has not always been top of mind. And it's not always the reason that advertisers come to out of home. They're not looking for one-to-one. They're not looking for low cost per conversion. What they're typically looking for is a brand play, some sort of strategy that involves making their brand look elevated and have an incredibly high reach, an incredibly high number of impressions, and have an impact on a market. So instead of playing in the direct one-to-one tracking space, it tends to be more in the econometric space where you want to look at certain signals that are down funnel, first party on the financial statements of the company and readily available. So there's all sorts of tactics to measure performance of an ad campaign. We run them at all scale, luckily. So we've done quite a few experiments that have allowed for us to see what works, what doesn't, what kind of scale you need to see performance in certain indicators. And it's not easy. It's probabilistic. It's not direct. And it's a difficult connection to make. But once that connection's made, it's easy to iterate. And it's easy to build a campaign, kind of a duplicate campaign or a comparable or similar campaign in another market.
Got it. I mean, that's a good segue. So to the next question, which is, do advertisers generally adopt out of home after having saturated more traditional digital channels? Or do you see advertisers adopting out of home as a staple channel? Just broadly, and given the life cycle of the advertiser, the type of thing that they're advertising, how does out of home fit into a marketing strategy?
Yeah, it's fairly straightforward. It fits into marketing strategies in two ways. One is audience reach. So with out of home, you can reach incredible audience sizes with national influence, with digital out of home and with static out of home very easily with a specific set of creatives. And it's easy to set up a time frame. So you can have massive reach at a low CPM. Additionally, the creative assets are lightweight. So you don't need to develop a massive amount of sizes or differentiating elements. It's fairly straightforward to set up creatives for out of home. And so these campaigns can be launched with ease. So audience reach is one of the major ones. The other thing that we tend to see is, especially with the D2C space, is this very precise geo-based advertising. So you want to have a specific influence on, let's say, sales. So you can deploy out of home to elevate the brand, improve your sales, and improve the frequency of exposure to that brand via out of home. So they want to boost sales in a specific area. Folks tend to come to out of home and look for options there.
I think this is a good place to hover. I've kind of two follow on questions for what you just said. So you talked about, you know, reach, a tremendous amount of reach. So you kind of talked about two different things, right? You brought up this idea of like, okay, well, if a D2C brand's going after a specific market, well, then that's just another way to reach those people in those market, and this reach the people in that market, in addition to probably all the digital stuff that they're doing, right? So those would run in tandem. So I would have, you know, my normal social ads running, my normal sort of display ads running, search ads. And in addition to that, I would probably spin up some out of home just so that I know that I'm reaching the people in this target geo as many times as possible and in as many contexts as possible, right? And maybe the digital out of home is providing a halo effect to the pure play digital, because like you said, okay, this makes me look more legitimate, right? It's not just some random company that had $10 to spin up a Facebook ad campaign. It's, you know, I actually had to go through the process of buying a billboard. So maybe that incurs this halo effect that allows my digital spend to be more efficient. But I guess the question I have to you is, so that seems like a fairly reasonable approach. And that seems like a very strategic approach. Does out of home also allow you to reach an audience that's not available through the traditional digital channels? And I'm thinking about places like, you know, more rural parts of the country, or places where like the internet's not as prevalent, or the demographics just don't lend themselves to, constant, you know, sort of like online browsing. Does that open up that audience? And is that a reason to use it?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's difficult to track, right? Since these signals, in order to track whether or not we're reaching an audience we haven't reached before, we actually need those signals to come from those individuals who may not be available across other channels. So there's kind of two audiences I think of in my head that may be difficult to reach on other channels that out of home may access better. The first is an audience that exists within an area of home is heavily saturated. The majority of out of home, just let me be clear, is located within city centers. Suburban out of home is extremely limited. Rural out of home exists, but it's on primary roads. So you're not going to be reaching individuals who, you know, aren't traveling or aren't kind of commuting for some reason. But within city centers, there are audiences who are somewhat turned off or focused on, you know, personal data privacy, whatever that may be. And so they may be difficult to reach via, you know, if you're trying to reach them via mobile ads or paid digital channels, more your area of expertise. But with out of home, there's no option to turn off the ad. There's no skipping it or kind of hiding it. It's not interrupting your YouTube video. It just kind of exists, and it exists as a real estate asset. In fact, that's how it's always been booked up until more recently, is as a real estate asset, where you have a lease and you have a period of time where you rent out the space and you can do what you want with it under certain parameters, rules, and guidelines. And that's great. It also allows for you to reach an audience that may only be exposed to that specific asset because they live in the area and for no other reason, right? We're not trying to target, or in this case, we aren't trying to target specific demos or psychographic indicators. Really, we're just trying to reach an area. And that's how historically that's been that advantage with out of home. It definitely still is. It's just to try and find where those people are. And there are other ways to do that. So that's kind of the first audience. The second I referenced a little bit, but there are rural audiences that can be reached for insanely low CPMs. There is, you know, direct targeting may have a kind of consistent national CPM, whereas with out of home, I'm booking a unit in Texas where I'm from, in Lubbock or in Amarillo, is going to have shockingly low CPMs, low costs. We have advertisers who take advantage of this at scale. They'll book thousands of units across the US, all under a $3 CPM, all static units, just so that they can reach the most large audience possible, which they're an online brand, they're a national online brand who can do delivery. So reaching these people is not a limitation for their business, but it has been a limitation for their other ad channels. So they love coming to out of home because it is such an easy way to reach those rural audiences at the lowest cost possible.
Got it. And that's actually an interesting point, because I mean, it tends to get much more expensive on digital channels as you get much more precise with your location or much more narrowly scoped with your vacation. So if you're trying to target a specific city, in some cases, it's not possible. On many channels, it's not possible. But even if you can't, like on Meta, it gets quite expensive, like from a conversion standpoint. If you're running a conversion optimized campaign, there's generally no reason why people in a certain city would respond to whatever your product is, especially like a digital product, like a sort of like broad-based digital product. right? That's why you target broadly and let the platforms figure out what those parameters are. And probably city is not one of them, right? Unless that product, digital product is, you know, specific to a city. But if you're like the local ice cream shop, well, then those people are the only relevant audience. And you know, the applicability of the product, which is ice cream, everyone likes ice cream, is the thing that's broad based within the geographic scope. So I could see that being the case where there'd really be no reason for like a broad based digital product, like an app, to target city by city unless it was only usable in that city. And that was actually one of the problems with scaling some of the two sided, like, you know, physical delivery or even ride sharing apps early on, right? Because you had to find enough, you had to get enough liquidity on both sides, on the supply side and the demand side in every given city. You couldn't just do these broad based nationwide campaigns because you had to go city by city. And it got really expensive with the digital platforms. And a lot of them ended up having like a pretty diversified mix of strategies, which included out of home and included direct mail, right? Because that was the only way to reach at scale those people in those like very specifically scoped geographies. So that's really interesting. For like some local business, I could see this being like the most effective way to reach the relevant audience, was just people within that city.
Yeah. And what's super interesting is then you can start to isolate incremental impacts from those campaigns, similar to how you would measure for a policy change at a city level, rather than needing to segment an audience that has specific user IDs, which, you know, may or may not be at the geo level. You can actually study the intervention's impact on that DMA. And that's what we do. We incorporate incrementality analyses and study them the exact same way that you would study a policy change. So, you know, if there is a traffic law that was adjusted, how many more traffic stops are there? For out of home specifically, it's if there is an out of home intervention with a reasonable amount of saturation. So making sure that you have enough reach and that you're getting enough estimated impressions to have a measurable impact on the sales within that particular geo, then that's going to be essential to the measurement of the campaign. Also essential to your planning for the campaign as well, making sure that you have a well-powered test in a specific geo. So a lot of our recommendations focus around the geo unit. Even though we have data at the H3 block level, which is Uber's geo level unit, we do have a user level audience data that we can leverage to help put targeting, which we can talk about in a bit. Typically when we're recommending experiments, which Ultimate is an experiment for a lot of advertisers, the experiment needs to occur at the geo level to start to understand what those intervention based impacts were for their target metrics. So it could be conversions, could be site visitors from that geo, could be sales.
I definitely want to get to targeting, but before we do, I want to sort of dig in here a little bit because I think this is interesting. So you talked about some sort of minimum threshold for saturation. Do you have like a rough rule of thumb for what that is?
Yes and no. My economics major forces me to give two-handed answers here, but we do have estimates around minimum saturation. There's kind of minimum, medium, and maximum. Those are based on the volume of mobile ad IDs we see in a population relative to the population within that city, factoring in some frequency estimates. So we do have some geo-specific, but as far as a rule of thumb goes, it's going to be pretty difficult to recognize your reach without taking a look first at impressions, sell data, and more. So can't give a raw number. Maybe I should have something on hand.
So it's case by case, but is it case by case dependent exclusively on the geo, or does it also depend on like what product's being sold? Because obviously a niche product, the saturation is probably more important than a very, very broad based product. You don't need to necessarily saturate the TAM because it's kind of everybody's a TAM. Is that the case? Or?
Yeah, definitely. If you know where your TAM is, if you have a strong understanding of that, can bring that to us, then we can start to segment the market. But typically, I mean, we're working with zip level data because the way that exposures work in out of home is you are exposing your campaign to individuals who are outside of the geo that you're targeting. It is inherent to the kind of out of home game. And it's a beautiful thing for data science and for experiments because you're reaching an audience that you aren't necessarily targeting. And therefore, you're able to set up a really strong control set that is varied, represents a population. You can do population studies that exist outside of whatever your targeting practices are and can look at data as simple as census data to understand what your out of home is doing. And those connections can be made. They can help to establish segmentation and run tests. But when it comes to saturation at the brand level, it is tricky to say. I mean, if you know exactly where your target market is, the ice cream shop example is great, then you should be running out-of-home ads within a vicinity of that POI. And that's very simple. A lot of advertisers do that as well. They say, we have these 10 retail locations across New York City. We're not going to be running on, you know, far up Long Island if we're located in a specific geo. So we're just going to run ads that are nearby. So that last minute touch point is there. And if someone wants to go buy, you know, some example product like CBD or something, they'll think about it right before reaching the store location, and maybe we'll redirect their path. So that's, you know, kind of a last touch conversion. It's still going to be slower than running an online ad, but it exists, and it's also building brands simultaneously.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned targeting. Let's jump into that, because I mean that feels like an area where you'd face more challenges than with out of home than with direct response on like a social channel like Meta. So what are the targeting parameters for out of home beyond geography, and how granularly can these campaigns be targeted?
Targeting parameters include audiences, certain media types, filters on dwell time. Of course, CPM and impressions are factored in. We recommend minimum saturation levels. So those are kind of standard parameters. Obviously, geo is a major factor. Out of home can be booked across the entire world, but you want to make sure that you're reaching your addressable market as well as reaching an audience that's likely to respond. When you think about planning for out of home, it's absolutely a mix of targeting parameters and should have a cohesive and specific goal in mind. When folks kind of come to us and expect just a simple brand play, it can often be incredibly difficult to even start to talk about targeting, because they're still thinking at this kind of national geo level, let's reach everybody we possibly can and call it a day. And that's fine. But if you're going to turn around and come to us asking for measurement or performance metrics, it's really hard to narrow in on what those may be. So sometimes the targeting needs to be specified to the exact conversion metric that you have in mind. For example, if you're targeting, for example, retail store lift, if you want to see a lift in volume of store visitors, the simplest metric to track at a specific retail location, you need to set up a test so that you're running out of home at one retail location and you're not running out of home at another set, and then align your other marketing channels so that the efficiency of the out-of-home campaign can be detected, and we can detect that retail store lift with our causal modeling.
How do you measure just like foot traffic? Is there some sort of sensor that these stores have? They can get like a precise count of the number of people that enter on any given day?
Yeah, we don't track that data internally, but we do use mobile location data from a third party. These are collected via SDK in order to track kind of mobile ad IDs, those anonymized device IDs that are linked to cellular devices. So that's one way we track store visitation. Store conversions or store revenue, of course, is provided by advertisers. So that can be fed into a modeling system we have. Other than that, there's some other solutions on the market, like some interesting things we don't really play around with. Our standard tracking is just mobile location and mobile data.
Okay. So you provide that to the retailer. You're the one providing them with the sort of visit counts. They don't have like a sensor at the door that just counts the number of people that come in. I see. The revenue piece is pretty straightforward, right? You're just counting receipts.
Yeah.
Okay. So who in the organization tends to control the out-of-home budget? Is it kind of the traditional marketing org? Is it user acquisition? Is it brand? Who's writing the checks to you?
Yeah, it tends to be the brand team. These lines are blurring with focus on performance marketing. A lot of questions being asked, what is our out-of-home doing for us? So there are some teams that know their out-of-home very well, know what their impact on down-funnel metrics are. So sometimes it can be a mix of the brand team. It can be CMOs that are reaching out to us in a smaller scale. Otherwise, agencies influence, if not control, out-of-home buying. So agencies are working on behalf of the brand. And there are out-of-home specific agencies that we work with as well. Their bread and butter is out-of-home. So they'll come to us and book on behalf of a brand.
Got it. And when they book, what is that media buying process like? If someone were to, you know, come to you and say, hey, I want to spin up a campaign, what do they do? What do they need to provide you with?
Yeah.
How do they flight the campaign? What's the process look like?
Yeah, it's fairly straightforward. Advertisers can buy either direct from vendors. So think of your typical like Outfront, Clear Channel, Lamar. These are all the major players in the space. What AdQuick has done is it's a platform that has set up APIs and direct connection with those vendors. So buying with us looks a little bit different. Basically, they can come to us, highlight some certain units or a unit type that they want to proceed with, along with the other parameters I mentioned, audiences, CPM, et cetera. And then we set up a RFP with a vendor, which is a request for proposal with the creative timeline, et cetera. They get back to us with an approved list of units that they recommend for the campaign. And then we provide that to the client. So they have the opportunity to then go ahead and book.
I see. Okay. So it's not totally self-serve in that sense. I mean, there's kind of a lot of coordination that happens.
Yeah, definitely. There's like 1,000 media owners in the US alone. I think there's more than 1,500 or more across the world. So there needs to be approval from city, state level on creatives. For example, you can't advertise THC in New York, but there are certain things that you can advertise. So yeah, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit to improve in terms of the process, but the convenience of having a single platform helps with facilitating measurement, setting up experiments, and deploying quickly, rather than having to hop on the phone with 1,000 different vendors across the US. Didn't used to be a fun process.
Judging from the pervasive odor on the street in New York City, I don't think THC needs to be advertised there. it's reached a point of total.
I lived in Denver for a couple of years and I would agree.
Total saturation. Everyone knows about it, apparently. Okay, but what about the digital out of home? So can that be booked with a self-serve like portal, like a self-serve ads manager?
Yeah, it's interesting. I can speak to this a little bit. So digital out of home on like if you're booking 8-second slots, if you're booking them traditionally, which is essentially the same way you would book a static unit, then not really. That still needs to go through the kind of RFP process, make sure there's avails, so availability. When it comes to digital programmatic, that's a little bit more efficient. And a lot of brands are looking into this. It's a fairly small portion of the overall out-of-home kind of revenue for the industry. But digital programmatic can be booked pretty efficiently using a DSP. So we're set up with multiple SSP supply side platforms who are providing us with real time avails and kind of regular updates on availability and CPM. So you can just set up a max CPM, set up the geos you want to target, and then set up audiences that you'd like to target as well. And then that gets approved pretty quick and can be deployed within a couple of hours, if not less. I might get talking to from our DSP lead after this just to make sure I'm telling the truth here, but it is very fast. It might even be less than a couple of hours.
I see. Okay. Can you talk to me about the approvals process for creative? Because that's really interesting. So that is dictated by, that could be dictated by like city law that is idiosyncratic. That could be dictated by state law. And are those mostly related to like sin industry type things, or could they be just like very unique and specific?
Yeah, it's city law and state law. There are some federal guidelines around creatives, not my area of expertise, but with my experience, typically tends to be the media owners have their own set of publishing and creative guidelines that are established. And that's why the creatives need to be approved independently. I mean, if you think about kind of the scale and size of these campaigns, they tend to be greater than 25K, 50K. If you're trying to reach saturation in New York City, you're going to be spending $200,000, $300,000. So it's just a bit of a slower bureaucratic process to approve a creative. The good part is there's pretty standard creative sizing, and it's fairly straightforward once you have those approvals in place to deploy them across multiple units and continue to deploy them across the city. So yeah, I wouldn't be the expert on specific guidelines. I wouldn't take my word as truth for everything on the creative guidelines. But there are varying guidelines between cities that should be kind of reviewed before going with the RFP.
Got it. Okay. I want to make sure that we dedicate enough time to measurement. So I think that's my sense is that would be kind of the most top of mind question for this audience. And so maybe I'll just start with like a really big, broad question is, how do you measure the performance of these campaigns? Now, we talked already about like, well, there could be different objectives, right? So if it's just saturation or just awareness, well, then, you know, okay, how many people did you reach? And that's provided by Geopath, right? But like, let's say that I'm an app developer and I'm considering out of home and I come to you and I say, Tyler, look, this sounds interesting, but I need to ensure that, you know, I'm a bootstrapped or, you know, I've got limited funds for marketing. I need to deploy them in the most efficient way. How can I know that it's these billboards that I'm buying or whatever, these out of home placements that are driving the installs that I'm seeing, or if I'm seeing you know, the incremental value from my ad spend on these placements? What would be your pitch to them? How would you guide them through that process? How would you explain the measurement approach?
Yeah, I think a key element to highlight from the media plan that you want to run with would be the size. So if you want to deploy the most efficient capital possible, you're going to need to assess which audiences you want to reach and then match those against the audiences that can be reached via out of home. There are thousands of audiences available. We have partnerships set up with audience providers such as Experian, TransUnion. So targeting an audience is not hard. We know based on mobile location data, generally where audiences exist, we've measured their performance and ensured that they are more likely to convert at certain units where the audience is more saturated. It's on the media planner to establish what the audiences are and then index those against our real-time existing mobile location data to then focus in or hone in on targeting for that out-of-home campaign. It's fairly straightforward. We have units that are specifically set within regions that have a higher indexing rate of an existence of an audience. For a developer, or we're working with a mobile gaming company. So for the gaming company, they would need to focus in on kind of where their existing market is, but also where the opportunities are. We don't know what those are going to be as a platform. We don't decide those for an advertiser. So we can either A, run an experiment, which is a generalized out-of-home campaign across an entire market and discover what audiences were affected, because then we can retroactively index the audience data that we have available against the exposures that we collected from the campaign. So people who were walking by the billboard, highly likely to have seen it based on our probabilistic modeling. We can compare which ones then converted and downloaded the app. So we can make that connection using mobile ad ID. Or if that audience already exists and is hyper-targeted on a digital space, we can just match it within our system and look for audiences that are effective and easy to target. For a small scale, I would recommend programmatic digital advertising. The CPMs are fairly low. It's easy to activate. It's quick. You can use creatives that are comparable to a mobile game, right? You can use video and sound. There's a lot of exciting in this space and a programmatic digital space. Also, the minimums are significantly lower. But if you're releasing your kind of coup de grace, like your huge game, and want to advertise this across the city and make sure that everyone in the world is playing it, or everyone within a specific geo is playing it, you can go with the traditional approach. You just want to make sure you're selecting the right geo that fits against this audience you're trying to target.
I would like to drill down into the kind of methodologies that are used. So like what kind of a model are you using to sort of quantify this causal impact? Maybe just start there, and I would like to kind of understand how this has changed over time. Like, so I imagine, so we've seen the whole advertising space has had to adapt to, you know, signal degradation and loss of signal generally. And so, you know, I think we've seen a lot of innovation in this space in the last couple of years as it was just necessitated. So maybe talk to me about how, like, what are the specific methodologies that you're using? And you know, feel free to get as technical as you want. But then I kind of want to talk about like how that's changing over time and where you see it heading. Because I think that's really fascinating to see the innovation, the pace of innovation in the space right now, where it's probably been more or less stagnant since like the 60s.
Yeah.
But I feel like in the last maybe couple of years, like even maybe 3 years, you've seen a level of innovation that, again, because it was necessitated, there was this forcing function, but seen a level of innovation that's sort of like really exciting, and it's a cause for great optimism. But I'll maybe start with just the methodologies.
Yeah. The specific methodology that we have leveraged and probably will be less accurate as we're moving forward, frankly, is direct attribution. Like I mentioned, we're tracking the mobile location signals from users across the US and other markets where we're running out of home and connecting those back to online events using pixel data. This is not going to be around forever, and we recognize this. The direction that I see it headed, very simply, is omnichannel media mix modeling with effective incrementality testing, control geo testing. I think this is going to be, and of course, honing in on specific lower funnel metrics or even revenue as a driving factor for deciding what these larger scale brand channels are going to be. This is all to say, a huge caveat here is you need to be reaching saturation within these geos to even begin to talk about mixed media modeling, like the level of scale required. I think if you have a strong understanding of what your audience does, where they live, and what kind of activities they behave or participate in, you're going to have a decent understanding of where they're going to be. This out of home is all about location. That is the fundamental element here. It's all about predicting where your potential, your TAM is going to be, and then reaching them with creatives that are resonant. Creative testing is easily done for brandless studies, but location is just as fundamental as a good creative. We've seen this through the experiments we've run, where simply placing a brand name without a strong creative can be highly effective. Creative is critical. But given that there are these audience indicators and they aren't going to be going anywhere, they're still at the device level. There is audience level information. The out-of-home placements location will be predictable, will continue to be predictable. And that's what we try to provide. So at a very small scale, it's recognizing what those locations will be and then targeting them simply as a lap on and finding what units are nearby, what units are visible, reflect your brand well, aren't placed next to a shop that you wouldn't want to be placed next to. Some very simple out-of-home best practices that you can overlay.
How do you think about like ad stock or lag, right? Because I can imagine that differs by product type. So there's some stuff, it's like, okay, I'm seeing a billboard, I might need to buy. It's like something that I buy every single day. And so the next time I have the opportunity to buy, it could be that day. And some stuff, it's like a car. Well, I only buy those every couple of years or whatever. So
yeah,
there's got to be some sort of lagged effect that's accounted for. How do you sort of implement that in your measurement?
Yeah, we have pretty strong data on ad stock and time to convert when it comes to out of home being leveraged as a brand driver, as a site visitation driver. When it comes to conversion, it's such a slow channel relative to other channels that there are kind of trickier. It's trickier to measure it over that length of time. Typically for out of home, if you're using it really as a brand driver, want to drive folks to site, you're going to be looking at a couple of weeks, at least 2 weeks, time to convert to site. And that can vary dependent on time to conversion, as well as basically how long it takes the sales cycle for your specific product. It's super interesting right now. We're actually seeing a lot of folks on the B2B side leaning into out of home, using it as a way to elevate the brand, kind of prove that they are competitive within a certain geo. And so there is no real way to effectively or to measure their conversion rates. And so we have to move up the funnel. And that's what we typically recommend, is look for these indicators rather than for these new driving events.
Got it. And last, you mentioned creative testing and so you used brand lift to accomplish that. Can you talk to me about that in more detail? So I guess the question is, you have to do that sequentially. You couldn't do that in parallel, or if you can, what's the holdout and what are the controls?
Yeah, I mentioned before that out of home provides a phenomenal space for experimentation and audience discovery. This is true for brand lift studies. We deploy brand lift surveys to individuals who are likely to have been exposed to the ad campaign, but may or may not have been because they weren't necessarily looking at the ad. So with out of home, you have an exposure subset of individuals who are near the ad while the campaign was running. You filter by the play logs for digital units. You know that your creative is live. Someone was in front of the billboard, but they may or may not have looked up at the billboard. And deploy surveys to these individuals and then source responses on whether or not there was an exposure. So you basically ask them an ad recall question. Do you remember seeing this creative? You can withhold the brand name from the creative. And if they do, they're placed into a test group. If they don't, they're placed into a control group. And then the experiment looks for incrementality between those two groups and a subset of KPIs. So it could be, you know, do you have any interest in this brand? Are you aware of their competitors? Do you have any intent to visit the site? Really, the list goes on for KPIs that can be tracked there.
How many variants could you test at a time doing that? It seems like it'd probably be fairly limited. I mean, that might just be a function of the availability of space.
Yeah, creative variants, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't really found a maximum, so I don't have great guidelines on what that would be.
But I'm just thinking about a billboard. I mean, you can't, if it's a traditional billboard, you can only put up one creative per month or something, right? I mean, those things, I've seen people up there like peeling the canvas off. So you can't just swap that out every 30 seconds or something.
Yeah, it's interesting. With digital units, you can rotate creatives and buy more slots within a certain rotating creative. So you can test different creatives. Programmatic space, you can deploy different creatives on a daily basis. So you can run them across an entire city, only source respondents from that specific day, and understand whether or not someone recalls seeing the creative. There may be some leakage there. Wouldn't recommend that approach, but it is possible. With the static units, it's not easy. You're probably going to want to segment at a geo level.
Or would you test? I mean, have you seen clients test on the digital surfaces and then apply those to the statics?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of overlap between the creative on digital and static and some of the other more kind of fun, eccentric, out-of-foam options, wrapped cars, digital taxi tops, advertising at gas stations and EV charging, that sort of thing. Tons of creative overlap and highly recommended as well. You want to increase the frequency and help everyone remember who your brand is.
Tyler, this is a fascinating conversation. I appreciate you coming on. How can people get in touch with you? How can they discover you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, Ty Tinker, so you can discover me there. AdQuick's also available, adquick.com, if you want to explore some of the neat things and experiments we're running. And yeah, that's nothing to plug upcoming, but thanks so much for the time, Eric. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the great questions.
Cheers. Thank you.